For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 99. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Kaplan.
You can find me at Turner B. Sparks on Twitter. You can find Kaplan at Cap in America on Twitter. And where are we on Instagram?
I'm Cap in America on Instagram. We're Lost in America Pod on Instagram.
I'm Turner Sparks on Instagram.
And on Twitter, we're also Lost in America Pod.
Yeah,
right?
The letter N.
The letter N.
Twitter doesn't let us. They can't handle the amount of characters we have.
After a 99 episode. We're almost at 100th episode. We're going to figure that out.
On the podcast today, we have Sandra Harwich. She's a journalist. She's written for the New York Times. She's written for the USA Today. She's written for ESPN.com, the Miami Herald. She's all over the world, Associated Press. She covers tennis around the world at the highest level. Serena Williams, she knows her by name.
I know her by name, too. Her name's Serena Williams.
Serena Williams knows her by name.
Oh, knows her by name. Okay.
Hey, Sandra. Hey, Sandy. What do you think about this? What do you think about this backstroke?
She knows her so well, she will be listening to this podcast because she'll know her friends on it. So
she's going to tune in.
Make sure to be funny today.
That's okay.
I know you know a lot about tennis, so you're gonna carry this episode.
No, that's the thing. Typically, I ask a lot of questions on these. I don't know what I'm doing. So this is you. You got the shirt on. You're looking good. You got a Federer.
I'm wearing the Roger Federer shirt, and I'm wearing my tennis shoes. Already dusted these off.
You're a big tennis fan, are you not?
I am. I'm going tonight. First plug of the episode goes to me. I'm gonna be at the U.S. Open tonight.
U.S. Open
tonight. I'm gonna be sitting in the stands. So if you're watching on TV, say hi to me. Wave. And it's a Syracuse alumni networking event. So I think it's tax deductible. I'm just assuming. Don't ask Gary Sparks.
Yeah.
My tickets, those hot dogs are like $16. A tuna sandwich is like $22 at the US Open. So I'm expensing the whole damn thing. I'm going to look for some I'm going to talk to all the podcasting people there, see if they know any interns. I'm on it.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. Two things to get to, but one, we've been talking about this for a few weeks. We need a new intern for the pod, Misha Han.
We got a leader in the clubhouse. Misha was on last week. He said he wanted to do the news with us. He just popped in, and on the way out the door, wouldn't you know it, left a little resume for us.
He sent his resume in.
Left it, yeah. It's like sort of like a tip the way you leave it in the room and casually walk out.
Okay, all the high school kids listening right now, you want to get hired somewhere, you just show up.
You show up and do the news. Be funny. Kill in the news.
Do the news. Kill on the news, and then bring a paper resume. Don't say, I'm going to email you. We don't do email. Snap it to us.
I mean, you can
us.
Say a CV because we're an international podcast. That's okay.
You can say a curriculum verite.
Yeah, you know.
But bring it on paper.
Bring it on paper.
So he's there also.
He's our leader right now, but we're working on getting some other ones, some Syracuse kids. And
some Syracuse kids, they've reached out to us. They want to do it.
Yeah, you were asking me.
The School of Podcasting. School of Syracuse, the podcasting building.
Yeah, I don't know if they're coming from the broadcast journalism program there, because those guys are probably going to, like, you know,
what'd you graduate CBS. With? I have a degree in podcasting.
I'm a PDR.
You know what? If you just throw engineering on the end of that, podcast engineer, boom, that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know what PDR would have stood for.
That's 30 grand podcast a year. Engineer.
PE.
That's good.
Yeah, Randy Lee, I think, is going back to school for that.
He is. So that's that. Tonight, everybody, if you're in Sacramento, California, or if you're around the world, you can afford a plane ticket. Southwest Airlines, $50.
Yeah.
If you're in Seattle, fly down.
And the great thing is because
I didn't say what I'm doing. Oh. I'm going to be at the Punchline Comedy Club in Sacramento, 8 p.m. tonight. Lynn Ruth Miller's on the show. She's 85 years old. You know that? We have an 85-year-old comedian.
Wow.
She's been on America's Got Talent.
Okay. I think I've seen her on America's Got Talent.
Yeah, she's an old lady. I met her in Vietnam. We were doing shows out there together.
She's still there.
She's still there. She went in the 60s and stayed. She's been around the world.
So tonight you have a busy night if you live in California. Watch the U.S. Open at night. You see me because it's the time difference. You see me on TV. Once you see me eating the popcorn or whatever.
Skeet out.
You head over to the Punchline.
Sacramento, California. I'm headlining all new material. If you saw me last time, it's going to be a blast. Kaplan, Amazon.
Yes.
If you want to support this podcast, first thing you do, come to my show.
First thing you do.
If you can't come to my show, go on Amazon.
Yeah. If you can't send a nephew to become our intern.
Exactly. That would be helpful too.
Or niece.
A niece or nephew will take an intern. But if you can't do that, if you're going to shop on Amazon anyway, which all of you are, Christmas is coming up. The holidays are coming up, as we say in America.
They are. Around the corner.
Right around the corner. Well, it's late August.
You're buying Labor Day gifts, sir.
So go, before you're going to shop, go to lostinamericapod.com. Click on that book, Audrey Murray's book in the upper right-hand corner. If you don't want to buy her book, that'll take you back to Amazon. Then regular shopping, the percentage comes to us.
Veterans Day, Halloween.
We got to pay the
bills. There's a lot of gifts to buy. If you have veteran in your life, costumes. It's all on Amazon. Everything. Back to school shopping, which is I got to do that. We got a list. You should see the list of back to school shit we have this year.
What do you got to get?
There's like
staples.
They ask for 12 paper rolls of paper towels. Like you have to, in New York City,
what?
You have to do supplies. Like
for who?
For your school. I'm like, I'm funding the school. Apparently the tax money is not enough.
It's public school?
Public school, but they're like crayons.
What?
Paper, notebooks, obviously, but paper towels, tissues, soap, hand soap.
Whoa. This should be, I mean, we're jumping the gun on Lost in America. We had something else planned, but just explain this to me. Wait, Uncle Sam doesn't.
Uncle Sam covers a little bit, but.
I thought all that money I spent gambling, isn't that supposed to go to schools?
We got to legalize it in New York because that's why I tried to raise money for the PTA
back in
the day. The walkathon, because they pay for some of that shit too. But yeah, they're sending you a list of stuff to buy, and I'm assuming it's going to kids
kidding?
Who aren't bringing. It's like literally from a Ruby's for pre-K, public pre-K, it's like 12 rolls of paper towels. And then like she's going to be spilling shit left and right. And there's pencils, there's crayons, there's notebooks. I'll get the whole list for you for future.
I had no idea.
Yeah. You're like supplying the whole classroom with stuff.
Was this the case when we were kids? Did our parents do this?
No, I don't think so.
I think we had
a little bit of Trapper Keeper. And we brought that. And
yeah,
we
you no- bring stuff for yourself.
Yes.
But you're not like bringing the teacher their lunch. And that,
no.
Right?
That will be next year.
The teacher requests a ham sandwich.
Take off the crust.
Yeah, exactly.
The teacher's low carb.
Are you guys kicking in for air conditioning? Are you paying the Con Ed bill?
That's soon enough. They're going to crowdsource that.
This is insane. This is an outrage.
So that's why I'm going to go. Everyone who's a parent out there, especially in New York City or any crumbling school district, go on Amazon for all your supplies. They got it all there.
Give money to us.
Give money to us. And hey,
let's get to Lost in America.
Play the music.
Play the music. Wow, that's real? I never knew that. All right, we're back. Kaplan, I'm lost in America this week. We're recording this a little bit in advance. I'm flying to California in a couple days, but I fly often.
You do. You're a world traveler.
I have a
freaking flyer.
I know I'm breaking new ground as a comedian, but I need to talk about airline travel.
Oh,
second, if I can. Here's something I don't understand.
Oh, it's the deal.
In these United States of America, when you go to fly, mm-hmm. you bring a bag.
Yeah.
A suitcase. They want to weigh the suitcase.
Right.
Because the 50 pounds, whatever it is, because the weight of the airplane, if there's too much weight on the airplane, and it can't fly, then you crash, and everyone dies.
Yes.
You get 20 feet in the air, and then you come straight back down.
Yes.
And you crash on the tarmac.
And you got to balance the plane.
Into a fiery death.
Uh-huh.
So they want to make sure that doesn't happen. So then they weigh your bag so that doesn't happen. But they weigh the bag.
Right.
But I'm looking around. In my line, there's kids. There's 40-pound kids. There's 500-pound people.
Yeah.
Guys, whatever. Women.
There are women. There's some 500.
There's
equal
people my size, 160, whatever we are.
Look
there's
at you,
people
showing
you.
Off.
I don't know how much you weigh.
I'm 140. 140. People don't know what I look like.
Short people, tall people, all kinds of skinny people, fat people. Shouldn't they weigh you plus your bag? Shouldn't you have to put your bag? If we're going with this idea that too much weight can hurt the plane, then shouldn't your bag go on the scale plus you jump up there? And it should be like an old tag team. It should be a combined weight.
Combined weight.
And then they announce it. A combined Turner Sparks and his Samsonite are a combined weight of 251 pounds.
A weigh-in. Yeah.
And you flex your muscles.
And you could do, if you choose to do a group fare, leave with friends or family, because you can average it out.
Yeah.
That could be a whole,
those old, triple tag
teams. If you're a fat guy, you got to recruit, a thin girl. And,
yes.
And then to try to do me a favor here.
Yeah.
Fly with me.
Buy some of their weight. And then when you're in line, you can sell your, you can scalp your weight.
Scalp your weight.
I'm coming in 50, the weights, say the weights, I think it should be a combined 250 pounds.
Yeah.
200 pounds for a person. No, say 300. 250 for a person, 50 for a bag. Or if you weigh 200, you get a 100-pound bag. Or if you weigh 350, no bag, and you got a treadmill.
Right.
you got to run it off. You got to sweat it out before you can get on.
Do they ever make... is there a limit? I don't even know. Do you have to, if you're really fat, buy a second seat ever, or is that never enforced?
You have to buy a second seat, but that's more your circumference more than
Because you're taking
weight.
Up space. You're talking about...
It's human space, yeah. So I think you should... But shouldn't the combined weight, doesn't that make more sense? Or am I crazy?
Well...
Should we change the segment to tell me am I crazy?
Is it 50 pounds? Are you always hitting it? Or
I hit it sometimes, but I'm saying that I weigh 160. I think 300 pounds is a reasonable.
Right, you should be negotiating.
If
with
you weigh 298, guess what? You get to bring a fanny pack.
But I don't. Are you aware you can go over the weight?
You have to pay. You can go over.
Yes, so you can't go over.
You can't go over, but you have to pay.
Right. So.
So what I'm saying is.
So you're saying they should charge fat people. That's what you're coming out in.
No, I'm saying it should be a combined weight. If you're going to say that weight matters, combined weight also matters.
Right, right. I think that would be a better way. I think the airline should.
I'm on the side of logic.
Right. Well, I think the way the current system is, it's clearly the airline's just, it's like a shakedown.
It's a shakedown.
Like when I explained to my kids of why they give out parking tickets when they change the sign, it's because they're looking to get money off you. They just throw in a no standing this sign today, and all of a sudden every car on the street. So they just
standing. They have no standing.
No standing means no parking. It's another way to say no parking. I don't understand it.
That's weird. But next week's LA.
Yeah, next week's episode. It's no standing anytime.
No standing.
Who the fuck? Yeah, my car's not. But anyway, it's the same thing. The airlines needed to come up with some fees.
Yes,
they came up with all these fees, and one of them was the bag weight thing. This 50-pound bullshit,
and they can't say human weight because then they're gonna get people are gonna be marching against them. Although let's be honest, those people they're not gonna want.
Well, they
march.
Don't want to anger because people. Yeah, it's people aren't as offended if you just tell them, because it's a way of being, I'm rich. I feel like I have so much stuff I bring with me.
Well, in the old days, being fat was a way to be rich.
Right, we got to get back to that way. But but if we make it fun, you have an idea to make this fun. If we can make this fun
it's
with
like
the way-
It's like a carnival game.
Yeah. So, all right.
And maybe even you do a light up, when you hit the thing.
Yeah.
You hit the sledgehammer, it goes boop.
Yeah.
And then if you hit the top, it's you get a bear.
Yeah. And if you can guess your weight, if you could guess some random people's weight within a certain accuracy, maybe you waive the fee. There's
great
things
idea.
You can do with this.
Great
make
idea.
Travel fun again.
If anyone's going to try this, I think Southwest Airlines. You know how they make them do comedy on the flights now?
They do?
Oh, yeah. You haven't been on Southwest?
I've never flown Southwest my whole life.
Southwest, they get the flight attendants. They stand up at the front. They do stand-up routine.
Ugh, really?
It's pretty bad. It's all.
Is it part of the safety
it's
check?
It's all stolen material. Yeah, it's all part of the safety check and everything. All right, so that's that, Cap. I don't know if we solved anything, but let's keep the show moving because we got more stuff to get to. This week, we've been getting great. So if you like the show, if you're having a good time, if you hate the show, we don't really care. Go on iTunes and review us. It really helps us move up the rankings. 5-star. Give us a 5-star review, but then say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Give us 5 stars.
We need you guys, if you like the pod, or even if you hate the pod, but you like us.
Yes.
Say something nice on iTunes.
Or you can say something terrible, but you have to give us 5 stars.
You can say something terrible if you're witty about it.
So you said we've got some good reviews recently.
We've got
what do we have?
Good ones recently. We're going to start reading them off.
Who do we have them from?
And then we got one recently from Run and Stuff. He writes, top five. I don't know if he's saying it's top five podcast.
I would say top one.
Top one, yeah.
Who are the other four?
We'd like to be more specific, unless, yeah.
We'll take it. It
says, honestly great, super positive, funny, great stories. Good for anyone that's interested in the world. Keep up the good work.
We'll take it. Thank you, top five. What's his name?
Run and Stuff. So thank you for that. And we'll be reading more reviews in the coming weeks.
Read more. We got to read more.
Oh, all right. Well, let's get one more.
Let's go with one more. I need to feel good about myself. I've had a down day.
This one says, Turner and Cap are absolutely hilarious. I could listen to them to debate for hours. Love the banter, guys. Keep up the good work.
Ooh la la. Who's that from?
That's from, and it says, big fan of the pod is the title, 5 stars, a D. Frelick. I don't know who that is.
Drew Frelick. Drew Frelick, comedian out of Shanghai, now based in Detroit, Michigan. Well, that's good. So, let me say this. The Lord giveth.
The Lord taketh.
The Lord taketh.
What are you going to say?
We have some hate
negative
mail.
Negative reviews? Oh, hate mail.
We have some straight up. Should we play the hate mail music?
Play the hate mail song that I haven't heard in a while.
All right, Kaplan, you ready for this?
I am. I'm not ready. I don't like bad news.
I don't know how else to I'm just going
to
start
I respond
it.
To it the way Trump, I just put me on Fox and Friends. I like the Fox and Friends. Don't give me bad news.
Okay, well, here we go. First time, long time.
Oh.
That's how they start.
Good start.
I'm writing from deep inside of America, where people still have values, apparently.
Okay.
That's a shot at New York City, I think.
Is that anti-Semitic yet or no?
I don't think. I think it's a shot at the coasts.
Okay.
These liberal elites.
All right. I'm a global. We're globalists.
I assume we are. To say Turner Sparks should be ashamed of himself.
Oh, I agree.
For attacking a 6-year-old child on the last episode. I'm writing to say that Turner Sparks should be ashamed of himself for attacking a 6-year-old child on the last episode. Going after Teddy Kaplan for voicing his opinion about your unfunny comedy. And making him, in quotes, the enemy of the pod, as you say, makes you less of a man than he will ever be.
Yes. And this is the opposite. I'm sorry I accused the anti-Semitic. This is standing up for the young Jewish boy who's being assaulted by the powerful Gentile.
The power structure.
Yeah.
This is saying I attacked him based off of his religious beliefs.
Yes.
Which is not true, but I'll keep reading.
And also, even being Russian, you probably don't like.
Add that to the list.
Yeah. Thank you, whoever this is.
I don't know how you do it in New York City, but we here in Allentown, Pennsylvania, respect our kids.
Is this my mom?
I don't know. And then it ends. Still a fan of Kaplan, though.
Oh, nice.
Signed, Upset in America.
Upset in America.
Well...
I wish they didn't say they're from Allentown because now I'm thinking like it's someone I might know. But I'm glad we're getting hate mail.
I got this to say. I don't apologize.
Yeah?
Well, you weren't there. I expect an apology. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, I don't know if
I'll get my mom to write in next week.
I try to get Teddy to end his thoughts on the podcast. I try to get him to end his thoughts on the show. And when he saw I was recording, he said it was good. So
he liked the show. So here's the thing. I'm
he
not,
said everybody was good. I said, was anybody not funny? He goes, everybody. So I think,
now I feel better.
Yeah. So he threw out an olive branch, but, you know, I don 't know. I don't know if he's, you know, 6-year-olds don't know how to feud properly.
I'm still thinking.
Yeah. You have
I haven't fully accepted it.
Yeah, because I don't actually have any evidence of that. So you shouldn't accept it.
So that's the hate mail, Kaplan.
All right. So 2-1, though. We got one ahead.
Exactly.
Two positives,
one negative. So and the one negative feels like it comes from very close to home.
Yeah.
We'll see. Ince is an app.
Was my dad. He would have, was it written handwritten note?
It's typed.
Oh.
And it's to my email. Well, this could give you a clue. It's to my email box.
Uh-huh.
Personal email. But it's from someone who clearly, it seems like they just created a new email
address.
A burner account.
Brian Colangelo.
So I don't know
maybe
who,
he's hiding out in Allentown. And
I don't know who in Allentown is also a big fan of Teddy Kaplan.
Teddy Kaplan loves to wear collared shirts. It's a very inside joke. So find a new slant, Turner Sparks.
Find a new slant. Maybe I will. Okay, so Ince is an app.
Yes.
And but we have Ince, a great app, but let's just demonstrate what it is today because
we
got an Ince.
We got a fan Ince from one of the greats on Ince, Jennifer Miles Peak.
What does she have to say?
She's got a question for us. Should I play it?
Play it.
Hey guys, quick question about nicknames. So I have this problem, which is I hate when people shorten Jennifer to Jen or Jenny. It really bothers me. And because of that, and because there are so many Jennifers, for a long time, I've sort of gone by the nickname of Miles. It's my maiden name. But kind of like coaches call players by their last name and that, I've had other people call me Miles and it just stuck. And so I asked people just to call me Miles to keep them from shortening my name to Jen or Jenny. So my question is, Michael, you have kids, but even you, you go by Kaplan. And Turner, I don't know, do people call you Turn? I don't understand this fascination with shortening names. So have people shortened your names, called you other things? Do you want your kids to have nicknames or other kids shorten their names? Like instead of Ruby, call them Rube or something like that. Anyway, it bothers me to no end. And I just want to know that I'm not alone.
Jennifer Miles Peak, thank you.
Yeah, and you're never alone when you're on Ents, for starters.
Do people call your kids Rube?
Yeah.
Do they call Rube? Teddy is a nickname, right?
Well, yeah, let's start with that. Well, let's start with Ruby. I do not want anyone calling her Rube. I don't like that at all.
It sounds like boob a little bit.
Isn't it like
an old 50s term for like, you're Rube?
Yeah, that's that. No, I think Ruby, I like that we picked names that were like, Ruby is no nickname, it's just Ruby.
You're right.
Now, Teddy's real name is Theodore, but from the beginning we were calling him Teddy. And then so it works in reverse where he likes to call himself sometimes Theodore, and he introduces himself to people as Theodore.
Oh, that's
which
funny.
Then almost like, I was like, well, your name's Teddy, so.
What about Ted? Do you think when he's an adult or?
I mean, Randy Kaplan will not be happy if he's Ted.
Really?
That's the one thing you're not allowed to call him Ted. I'm not sure about Theo.
Why not Ted? Ted
she
Cruz?
She doesn't like the name Ted.
Ted Cruz? She doesn't like Ted Cruz?
His name is Ted Cruz, actually.
Yeah. Bill and Ted?
But yeah, no, he was, and his middle name is Miles. So we'll, that he'd go with that.
Ted Miles.
Teddy Miles. Yeah. So, me growing up, I was always Mike. Like, I think people just call me Mike for a while, and then it became Kaplan.
Kaplan's nope. A much stronger name.
So what happened though is at some point, I think I maybe mentioned this once before, but people started shortening it to Cap. People always call me Cap. It's not like I don't like it, but it doesn't. Kaplan's a character.
Wait, but Cap in America is your.
I know, but Cap. But if you're talking about like the word Kaplan, like if I was writing a character in like a screenplay or a book,
yes,
Kaplan would be a good alias if I didn't have the name Kaplan.
It's like a Kramer.
It's like exactly. We're Cap
minus the
Cap. You know, it does lose a little bit, so I don't always like it. You
okay.
Know, even though I go by Captain America, yes.
Yeah.
So that's the short of it.
All right, let's get to our guest.
Yeah, bring her in.
Come on in. All right, we're back with our guest, Sandra Harwit. Sandra, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
I've been listening to the pods.
Have you?
Really?
I'm practicing. I'm doing my homework.
What'd you hear? Who's better, me or Kaplan? Let's just start there.
If it was a tennis match, who would I be? In the analogy, would I be Federer or of podcasting or no?
Not yet, no. But you're working on it.
I'm working on it.
You're working on it.
I'm like...
you're about 50 in the world, but moving up fast.
Yeah. It's hard to battle the champ.
No, my goal is to be like Leighton Hewitt or someone who's like number one for like a second. And then I just lose it.
Yeah, but he's had a great career.
Yes. That's still a number one for a second.
I want to be number one for a second.
World.
1 week, I want to be the number one podcaster.
Yeah, I would take that. Kaplan's wearing a shirt in your honor.
Yeah, I'm wearing my Roger Federer. Although you told me this is not fashionable anymore. This is off. It's a Nike shirt.
It's a dinosaur already because he doesn't wear Nike. He went to Uniqlo, the average man's company.
But he does Uniqlo, but he also is big into Rolex. I see he has to wear a Rolex while he plays because they're a sponsor. That seems like a contradiction, no?
I'm sure that Rolex is turning over on his wrist going, oh no, I don't belong here.
Once Uniqlo starts making watches.
Well, don't you think it's like, do you think he can use an excuse? Because I couldn't play tennis with a watch personally or any sport.
If they were paying you what they're paying him, you'd be wearing a watch.
You could figure it out.
All right.
So it's good. So you, we were just talking off air, but we could start. So you've covered tennis around the world for a while.
A while sounds good.
Let's read your credits.
Many years.
The USA Today, you've written for ESPN.com, the Associated Press, Miami Herald, the New York Times.
All of those
all
have
the
been crazy
newspapers.
Enough to hire me at different times.
That's fantastic.
I'm here in New York. I'll be covering the U.S. Open for USA Today. I'm their only writer on the ground.
Really?
Yep.
So that's what's happening with all, because who was it that just, was it Daily News?
The New York Daily News just fired like everyone in the sports department.
Everybody.
In the paper, really.
They have robots, Russian bots are now writing for the New York Daily News.
I'm in a dead profession.
Yeah, but you're the last one. That's pretty good. They still need one.
All right. I wish I was the one.
Well, I'm sure tennis is gaining so much popularity, right? In America, you're going to tell us about that. So there'll be lots.
I wish.
Everywhere I go, I see kids playing tennis.
So, but with the journalist thing, so you're the one person covering the U.S. Open for the USA Today. How many people say like 10 years ago would be covering it?
They probably might have had like two people, but you would get like where it really is noticeable is like wire service, like Associated Press. They would cover a Grand Slam and they would have four or five people and often would hire me as a independent six because I'm a freelancer. And nowadays they'll do it with one or two. Some days one, sometimes two. Everything has changed. It's like, and then they'll cover some events just from back home in the office.
Well, there's watching on TV and pretending. Writing the story then?
I didn't say anything, but yes.
I used to watch NBA in China. They would show the American NBA games. But then the two announcers, they didn't have the budget to fly them to America. So they would just sit in a studio in Beijing, but do the commentary.
Yeah.
And so they were the slave to whoever was running the TV camera in Houston.
And we'll go to our silent reporter is like someone in the kitchen.
Yeah.
They do that, like Tennis Channel will do that, and they'll have people in the studio in California, and they'll be covering an event in Europe.
Really?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And do they pass it off like they're not doing that? Or they're just,
no, they're honest. They're up front that they're in the studio.
Yeah, we're the Tennis Channel. What
watching
do you want
the TV with
what
you.
What do you want from us? Yeah.
I've seen them do... They used to do that with soccer a lot in America. I feel like now they don't do that anymore with like the Champions League games and stuff.
But that's what happens when all of our generation wants everything for free, right?
We, of course.
All this media, all these like you want to just read stuff for free.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, yeah. The thing is nobody actually sat down and said, how are you going to use the internet to our advantage? So every paper just threw their, you know, stuff online and never thought about how they could make money on it. And now your generation or the generation that's coming and everything like that, they just think they're entitled to it for free. So they don't want to do the pay.
Totally.
Yeah, and we read more content than like any, you know, now it's so much content at your fingertips, but then we don't want to, anytime you're like, oh, charge, firewall, paywall, I'm like, oh, screw that.
Right, yeah, move on to the next place.
I don't think we're from a weird generation that we were, when we were younger, it was nothing was free. And then all of a sudden it became free. And for a little while, I felt like I was like cheating almost.
Yeah.
But now the people younger than us, they just expect it all to be free.
Or they can't read.
Or they don't know how to read.
Yeah, I read the newspaper. I like to get my hands dirty.
These millennials don't know how to read.
I used to read the USA Today every day when I came home from school. I'd have a bowl of chips and salsa and a Snapple.
Really?
And read the USA Today sports page.
It was the most colorful.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And it's good. It's head like, charts, you know.
Peter Vesey.
It's I write long. You know, that's my problem, as I've always been long. Even my story, I just did a story on Arthur Ashe that will come tomorrow's paper, I believe. They had a condenser for the paper. And online, it will probably be the full version. Of course, I went very long. They asked for 700 words, and I don't know, it's like 1250.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Like 702.
You get paid by the word.
I wish. I said I write long.
And the story was, it's about Arthur's brother, or is it?
Well, no, I talked to Arthur's brother. Okay. He won the first U.S. Open, which was for professionals, 50 years ago, 1968. Ironically, he was an amateur because he was an Army lieutenant. So he couldn't take the prize money, which was $14,000. And they thought that was like the mint, like, you know.
Yeah.
Incredible. Like, you opened up the banks and just handed.
So where do you go with
this
the money
year's,
go?
This year, it went to the runner-up, Tom Acker, who's a Dutchman. Yep. And this year, the prize money for the champion, both the men and the women, same equal pay, $3.8 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
A woman's getting that,
and that
too.
Goes to a Dutchman as well?
Well, we don't know. It could.
And Arthur, you just did gloss over something, though. Because I don't know as much about tennis as both of you do. Is it equal pay because it has to be, or because they're equally as popular?
Well, there was a whole
Are men's and
movement.
Women's tennis equally as popular as each other?
It depends.
It feels like they kind
it goes
of are.
In, it goes in runs, I feel like.
It depends on the players. It depends on the tournament. And it's because it's politically correct to give equal prize money. I mean, can you say that they're not working hard? I mean, just because they're playing, you know, best of three sets as opposed to best of five sets. The better players, men, want to play best of five because they're going to fare better. But, I mean, they train and they put the money into it and they do all that. So they are putting in the effort.
Yeah, but you could say that about like the WNBA as well, and you're not going to convince someone to pay.
But the difference is
someone $30 million because LeBron's making 30.
But I think aesthetically, tennis is different than basketball.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because there's no dunking, for instance, or like
it's more of an equal. Well, is it? That's my question. Yeah. Is it equally as popular? It must be similar.
So. Well, I think it's even more popular.
No matter how hard they're working, if one's not making money, they're not going to get paid equal.
Right. I mean, there is a school of thought. Some people feel like the women are tagging on to the men, but in a lot of tournaments. It's not that way, and they're as popular. And it depends. Every tournament's different. That's it. I mean, this year's Australian Open, I mean, there was no doubt in my mind being there. The women's event was totally more interesting and more watchable and things like that than the men's turned out to be. So, you know, there it was the women. Then you'll get to another place, and the men are more, you know, compelling. It depends on the drawer and how it all comes out. So I do think it equalizes. And, you know, to me, I think you should get with the traffic bears.
Sorry, when you back to the men and women, you're saying in different countries or different tournaments, it's different. One's popular. Right. Is that based off of the local population? Are there some countries that are more interested in seeing men's or women's, or it's just what's it based
on? I don't know. I think it's really a mismatch. You know, mishmash.
Yeah.
I got that. So I don't think there's any tried or true, you know, no formula on that. I just think it depends. I know people who are just, you know, there's nothing but women's tennis. And then there are people who are like, I'm not watching that. And, you know, the same for the men. So, and a lot of people pick their player and they'll follow that player to the ends of the earth.
And you know Serena Williams, right?
I do.
Pretty well?
Yeah, very well. I first met Serena when she was about 11.
Wow.
She came with Venus to, I was doing an interview with Venus. She was 13. And I met them at an academy. They played at the Rick Macy Academy in like, I think it was Boca or Fort Lauderdale or something like that at the time. And she, even back then, like, I was there to see Venus, but Venus was more quiet and whatever. And Serena was like a chatterbox. Blah, 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 and she still is. So.
Because Venus was really hyped, too. And then Serena just was somehow just beat. Even somehow they're
well, the father there, always said that Serena was going to be the better. But, you know.
Father, kind of? I'm trying to figure out, like, what kind of crazy tennis dad I want to become for my kids.
You know what? In a certain way, he was a little out there. But in the end, I think he was better than a lot of the others because they once they reached adulthood, he backed off.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they had boyfriends or whatever. And, I mean, he really did kind of give them leeway where, I mean, I have to tell you, some of these players just, their parents are there. I mean, they're 32 years old and their parents are there. I won't give a name because I don't want, but.
Come on.
No, I can't.
But we need ratings.
The whole tour is listening to this.
One guy who no longer plays and everything, his parents always travel with him. And they, you know, the players after 1990 got a free room and his parents always stayed in the same room.
In the room with him?
Yes.
It's a tough way to get groupies.
Wow. After 1990, that doesn't really narrow it down. We're going to have to go.
Sounds like Jim Curry.
No, a little sooner than that. No, it was definitely not.
We
got to
cross-reference the athletes who played tennis after 1990. Yeah.
But
so we have. So you've seen her. Have you been around the world with where Serena's... Are there countries that she's more popular or less popular? Or where is she the biggest? Would it be here in the United States?
Probably, but there. I think it's interesting with both the Williams sisters. I think they're wildly popular with some segment of the tennis fan public, and then others don't like them. I mean, there's no, like, I'm neutral. It doesn't seem about either one of them. I actually really like Serena. I find her, she has her moments, everyone does. And, you know, when you're a star, you're a star. But she is, I find her very engaging and very funny. And I have a great relationship with her. Matter of fact, 2 years ago when she won the Australian Open, and she's like digging in her purse afterwards. She did like after the main press conference, she did a small one for a select group of media. And all of a sudden she comes out with this engagement ring that could just about blind you or whatever, but it's filthy. And so afterwards and everything, all these other writers kind of like shake her hand and I go to You know, and she goes, we're friends. Hug me. I said, and I want to see you clean that ring. You don't take care of a ring. Like, well, I just threw it in my purse. I said, no. When you have a ring like that, Serena, I expect you to make sure it sparkles every day. Do you understand? And they, all these other people looking at me like, you're telling him that? I go, yeah. It's, if I had a ring like that, boy, I'd be like blowing on it and yeah, rubbing it all day long.
I got a jeweler for her if she needs. She does cleaning.
How do they like you're in China? Because you said, we were saying before we started the podcast, you go to this the Shanghai tournament.
Right.
Every year.
Well, that's men's. So oh, that's she's men's. She's not there. Yeah. So, but I think she has played some of the women's tournaments.
Was she in the Olympics in 2008?
She was at the Olympics in 2008, and they won the doubles, but they both lost early in the round. I worked at the for the Beijing Olympic Committee. I was the ONS, Olympic News Service manager at the tennis.
And what does that mean?
It's kind of like they run an internal wire service like Associated Press, so that obviously if you write for the Washington Post and you have two writers, let's say, for the Washington Post there, and you might have some athletes, six or seven athletes in a variety of sports playing, at that time you can't go to all those venues. So this way the Olympic News Service, which has an entire staff of people, and that staff was under me. If there was somebody from that area where that paper was from, I'm filing constant reports from what's going on so they can just insert it right into their copy like they were there.
And how was... Yeah, exactly. That's what we should do. That's a great job.
Yeah.
You know, you have to write anything? Yeah. Just like, send me something from Beijing and yeah. I'll put it out, put my name on it. What about... Because Li Na, I remember she was really popular, right? The tennis player?
Very popular,
she,
yeah.
She was like the Yao Ming, but for tennis, for China.
How high did she get in the rankings? I don't...
She was number one, and she won two Grand Slams.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, just yesterday...
When was this?
Came...
I missed that somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Pay attention, Ken. I'm telling you about
I'm sexist, apparently. I missed that.
There's a problem here, right?
Well, yeah. Well, also, when you're in China, like, you can't miss... She was on every Gatorade bottle. Okay. She was on for a while, and then I can tell you it went south for her.
She was one of the players just yesterday nominated for potential International Tennis Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Okay.
Yesterday.
So how was that with her? Did you cover her... Beijing. How was the Beijing experience overall?
The Beijing experience was great. I mean, it was amazing. I've worked two Olympics. I've worked that one in Rio. Beijing, I did the test event at the tennis in the October before. They could have started the Olympics that day. Everything was pretty much ready.
Yeah, like six months early.
And it was great. I had like 15 or 16 kids from the University of Iowa who I was supposed to make into journalists in like 3.5-4 weeks of training. And then I had about 12 to 15 English language students that were Chinese from there. And everybody was great. And they gave me a great present afterwards. And they said they learned a lot. But the thing with the Chinese kids were, everybody in China picks, you probably know this, you lived in China, but everybody picks their English name.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, when you pick a name and it wasn't given to you, well, you can change up that name. So there I am the first week, and there's some of these women. It was basically all women. You know, one day they were Petunia, and the next day they were Violet. And, I finally was like...
A lot of flowers.
Yeah.
A lot of flowers.
I
love
say
flowers.
They're bandwagon jumpers. Like, they pick who's doing well in the Olympics, and that person loses, and like, I'm changing...
Well, people would always... so the first thing... Because Chinese
Serena.
Names all have a very literal meaning.
Right.
Like, my name's like, whatever. And then you're like, oh, what does that mean? They're like, oh, it means like fire, rain, like rising star.
Right.
And so whenever... Because I used to teach English, when I would give kids English names, their first question is always, what does it mean? And so if you name a kid like Jerome, like, what does it mean? I don't know. It's just like a name that people have. So then they wanted a name that was a literal name.
Right.
So it had to be like, yeah, Azalea.
Right.
Or that, Petunia. I didn't know a lot of Petunias, yeah, but no. I'm sure they were all in Beijing.
But I was so confused after a while. So finally, I just had it one day. I just like after like on the Friday, I go, okay, we're having a meeting now. Okay. For all the Chinese kids here, you are going to have to pick your English name for the entire Olympics. It doesn't matter. You know, if Tuesday you decide you don't like Violet, it's too bad. If you pick Violet today, you're Violet for the next 6 weeks. That's it. And they were all kind of perturbed, but we finally got, because I couldn't keep remembering different names. I don't know all these kids.
Yeah, they're just like, today I feel like this. Today I feel like that.
I thought, yeah, did a lot of your kids pick like basketball player names? Or
well, they didn't know. Like, they had names in their book. All right. when I used to, the first year there, I taught school. I taught high school kids. So they had a name in their book that they could pick, but those were all, it was like six names. And like, you can't name everyone Matt or Steve or Kevin. And so they asked me, like, suggest some names. So the only names I could think of were people in my family. Because actually, when you try to think of just names, you run out pretty quick. If you have to write like 50 names on a chalkboard, you can get to 20 and then you're out of ideas. So then I just started writing down NBA players.
Yeah.
So it was like LeBron, Kobe, Carmelo, Keon, because Keon Clark.
Keon Clark.
We had a Keon in my class. Oh, so it was hilarious.
No, Lee Nas.
What's that?
No, Lee Nas.
Yeah.
No, it's not an English name. Lee Nas, Chinese name. So she was, she got to be super popular though.
Oh yeah, she's very popular. And I think she probably still is. And she was a little bit of a renegade because she had some, you know, words with the Chinese Federation, and she wasn't gonna necessarily give up all her money and wanted to live a more free lifestyle. So,
was it true?
I think they worked it out.
I remember that she wanted to, she was training in the US and they didn't like that. They wanted her to train in China. Am I remembering this correctly? And so then she actually, the government kind of like aced her out for a little while.
I think that was the story, but I can't absolutely guarantee it, but I think that does
happen. It was something similar, and then she had to work. She worked her way back in eventually.
But the thing is, now there's a few academies out there. I know Justine Anon, I think's coach, had opened one over there and stuff. But even here, I mean, you're not going to become a player if you come from Kansas City and there's no other players. You got to be where there's competition so that you can foster and they push each other and everything. So if you're the lone kid in Beijing or Shanghai training, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, you don't want to be just whooping up on people who stink every day.
That's right.
You got to go play somebody good.
That's right. I went to
you got
to
lose.
Yeah.
I went to this thing called the Competitive Edge Tennis Program. That's how I got up to number honorable mention, I think, in the under-12s in the Lehigh Valley. So.
See, there you go.
Cool.
And what about, so what other tournaments you've covered? The one in Shanghai. How is that? Is that fun to go around the world and do these things? I mean,
I love the travel. I mean, it would be nice if I could go first class, but no.
Come on! I was going to yell at ESPN.com. Come on, ESPN. Hook it up!
So a lot of the time as a freelancer, I'm paying my own way and stuff like that. So I know to take the aisle seat. You know, that's the best I can
but
do.
You go to the Australian Open.
I go to the Australian Open. I go to a tournament often in Qatar, in Doha.
How's that?
I go to the Dubai tournament. It's interesting. It's very interesting. They're both very interesting. You know, Doha has more of an Arabic feel than like Dubai, where it's a lot of expats. So it's an interesting situation because they're both, I mean, compared to all the countries there, I'm sure, are open. I mean, not everybody from there wears traditional garb and stuff like that. So it depends. But what's interesting is I've gone shopping and the women, you know, they're in their burqas and everything like that. But it's kind of like a communal trying on room. And underneath is like tight jeans and tight tops and like this sexy lacy underwear. And I was like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Just for your husband?
Whoever's in the dressing room. But then the women can play the tennis, though. I mean, there's no barriers to what the women, like the players can wear whatever, right? I mean, they
the
wear
players
normal tennis.
Wear whatever there's no barriers to, I mean, so the first time I went there, I was a little nervous and everything. The first place I went was Doha, and I was like, oh, I better be respectful. So, you know, I kind of, even though I thought it was going to be high, I bought all pants so that my knees would be covered, and I kind of wore tops that were, like, below the, you know, my wrists and or down my wrists and everything. It's like I look like I was a religious Jew. It's like I didn't even have those clothes. But, you know, some of these women, one girl from the WTA tour who runs the women's, they had little spaghetti strap tops on and stuff. So I eased up a little bit.
Do you see it getting more popular? Like from China from the first time you went or the Middle East from the first time you went, is tennis growing or is it?
I have a feeling it's kind of like evened off. It was really popular before the Olympics, but I think since the Olympics, it's kind of a little slower there. Although I will say Shanghai in recent years has filled in the stadium, particularly at the end of the week when the quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. It's pretty popular now.
And is that just star driven, you think? Like the big names, people come out to see the big names.
I'm not really sure. I mean, the problem that they have in Shanghai, which you might not, is the tournament's actually not near Shanghai City. We stay in Shanghai.
Yeah.
So it's a good hour to an hour and a half to get out to where the event is.
It's very much, yeah, China's very much like the 80s was in the US, where right. they, like, if you want to build like a sports stadium, they're like, instead of building it in the middle of the city, here's a way better idea.
In suburbs.
Let's build it an hour away.
Right.
Because that's where the land is, I guess.
It's cheaper to build.
And then I think 10 years from now, they're going to like be putting everything back down.
Right. Now it's trendy in America to bring into the city. But yeah, that was the move in the 80s.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, land is cheaper and there's more wood, but people don't want to go out. And I think that, you know, they all have this thing, well, we'll build hotels out there and we'll build all this. But really and truthfully, who doesn't want to stay in Shanghai and go shopping?
It's a great city.
Yeah.
They got Uniqlo.
Shopaholic.
Yeah, because like
where is tennis most popular? Which country?
I think that, you know, where you have the top players and everything. I think it's probably very popular in the UK because it's always been popular there. I mean, Wimbledon is just a different animal than a lot of other events. And I think it's popular in Spain and it's, you know, Rafa makes it popular and stuff like that.
Does Serbia, like Novak, make it more popular in Serbia?
The problem there is that they don't really have a tournament, you know.
Right.
So, but in Spain, they have a number of tournaments.
And what about like tennis courts? Like we have public tennis courts here in the U.S. Is that a thing around the world?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
A lot of places have it. And you have to remember in a lot of places, like in England, I mean, next to soccer, which they call football, I mean, tennis is like the next sport, you know, maybe cricket and stuff like that. But how does a sport like tennis vie with baseball, football, basketball,
the U.S.?
Yeah, in
hockey. I think it's always had, it gets this reputation of like being like, the country club sport or whatever in America. And like for some reason, like golf, well, Tiger Woods like transcended that with golf for like a moment. Like everyone was into golf and was watching it. Or I wasn't, but a lot of people were.
Yeah.
Well, that's just with tennis. Maybe that happened back with like Macron and Connors days.
The Williams sisters. Someone yeah.
You got to have more men playing against women.
Yeah. The Battle of the Sexes movie.
I think more people saw that movie.
Yeah. My wife was like watching that movie. She was like, is this real? I'm like, yeah, it's a real story. Like, she didn't. How did this happen? And like that whole, they filled up the Astrodome.
But the truth is, and John McEnroe has been criticized many times, but I think in a lot of ways he's right. I mean, he could probably go out there at, I think John's like 59 or 60. I can't remember. But he could probably beat some women, you know, pretty high ranked women.
Now that's something I would watch.
Yes, that would be.
But
he stays in shape.
Does he say he can? Is that what he says?
He said he could, and then people got mad at him. But I mean, he could, but he's like one of the best, most talented tennis players ever, and he's still in shape. I mean,
right. But so. I mean, and it's different. I mean, there's no doubt that it's different, you know, being a guy than a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fact of life.
It's funny. That's a controversial statement now, but it's not at all.
Yeah. It's like that's the thing.
That doesn't mean that the women players aren't great.
It's just different.
Whatever. They're
right?
Different, yeah. You know.
China loves table tennis.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Ping pong's huge in China. So then regular tennis, I think it's pretty big. But I'm trying to think of if there were even public tennis courts where I lived. I don't know I think you had to rent them. I don't know if there was public, but there's not a lot of there's not public basketball courts where
right.
I live.
But even here, I think there are a lot of places you have to rent. Might be nominal fee. Okay. But
I think the way to get tennis more popular, I don't know how we could do this, but it's like soccer's more popular now because of the World Cup. So like, how do you make the Davis Cup more popular? Because that Davis, do you know what the Davis Cup is?
I've heard of it.
It's like teams, countries face each other.
Oh, that's cool.
Like if we started with USA with Russia in some sort of battle.
Yeah.
Right now, people would be into that because everyone's anti on Russia and everything.
Yeah.
This is a kind of a sore subject at this point. You know, they voted to change the Davis Cup. And personally, and I do work with the ITF personally, I think the change is going to fail.
What's the changes?
What do they do? So before it was country-country,
what is
it?
It was country-to-country, and there was always a home and away team. And while, everybody in the U.S. judges everything by the U.S. point of view, the truth of the matter is Davis Cup was really popular.
Was it?
Just not here.
Right, yeah.
Ah. I mean, they were just the last round, the quarterfinal round in Spain with Rafa, they had like 27,000 people going.
Right, because that's what I'm saying. Like, it taps into the nationalist, like World Cup-y.
To me, you have to have that home and away thing. Now what they're going to do is they're going to have, I think it will be 16 countries in a first round home and away. And then after that, that will be like February. And then nothing until like November, when they're going to have at the same neutral venue, 18 teams playing first around robin. Okay. And then from the quarterfinals, like a knockout. But, you know, this year, I think it's going to be in Madrid the first time. In a stadium that really is, it's very big, it's very modern, and it has no soul. Hmm. But they're going to have it there. And yes, they're going to get Rafa fans out there, and Spain's going to be big. But who's coming to root for the U.S.
Right.
Team?
I mean, or I feel like that defeats the purpose.
I am the layman here. Did it used to be always be in the U.S. and the changes that they're moving it abroad?
It was just where the countries would play.
It was always a home and away. So one country always had a home advantage. But it could be all over the world. I've covered Davis Cup. The last Davis Cup match I covered was last year in Colombia, in the country of Colombia. And then I've covered in Belgium. I've covered in Italy. I've covered in Australia. I've covered in the United States. I've done, so it moves around the calendar. And the problem, and there were problems with it, is that it was spread out through the whole calendar, which is hard to get a feel. Although the truth is, the World Cup is also spread out. All those
qualifying
rounds and everything take a year. And they're spread out.
Yeah, but then the big tournament happens all at one time.
Because
it's this big momentum.
Essentially, the Davis Cup is like you have two guys who play singles against each other.
Well, you have two singles the first day, a doubles on Saturday, and reverse single matches on Sunday. But it's going to go to, I think, just two singles and one doubles.
Mm. All right. Well, so they're going against me. They're not listening to me.
No, they aren't.
Well, because
give us your point yet.
My point was they need to find a way to make it more popular, but I don't think that's going to work. Like, I feel like more popular in America, I guess, get Americans into it, I feel like Davis Cup.
Sandy's saying they don't. Who cares? Yeah. Screw the Americans.
Yeah. Well,
it's already popular around the world. Cater to the people it's popular for. I'm on your side. I didn't.
We're having a good
argument. I'm in.
You're in. I don't know what it's about, but I'm in.
Because remember in the World Cup in '94 when they wanted to have it in the U.S. and we made them add quarters? Do you know, instead of just playing two halves? Yeah, they played four quarters.
They did in '94?
Yeah, because that was a concession they gave to us that if you want to have it here in the U.S., we'll do it, but we need to put in advertising.
Right. Well, I think Americans just want, if we had better players, people would be more, if we were winning it, they'd be more, that's simple. They don't have to change the format.
Why do you need the U.S. involved? Who cares?
Well, you need, the U.S., you know, there was a time when the boom, and I think in 78, it didn't have to, people in this country loved Bjorn Borg.
Yeah.
You know, even though he was Swedish. People liked Guillermo Vilas, even though he was Argentine. It was just a boom. But you had the foil. You had the Jimmy Connors.
Right.
And then
all those guys had personality.
Well,
not Borg.
Vitas Gerulaitis coming in there. So you had the thing. Now, it's that we haven't had a champion since Andy Roddick won the U.S. Open in 2003.
What's your favorite tournament to cover?
You know, that's so hard. I don't really have one.
What's
I have
your second
a number.
Favorite?
My second favorite. it's everything's for a different thing. I love Paris, the French Open, because Paris.
Oui.
You know, I love Shanghai because I go and I have dresses made and, you know, I shop and stuff. And you know what? All the time I've spent in China, I have two Chinese words, ni hao and xie xie.
Oh.
And beyond that, I know nothing. Xie xie.
You don't know Taiguela?
No.
That means too expensive when you're bargaining.
I better write that one down. Like, I need that.
What's Shay Shay?
Shay Shay's thank you.
Oh, okay.
It's like Shay Stadium twice.
Don't be so polite. Too
and
expensive.
Then the other one, people always learn is Taiguela for too expensive. And then they learn Bing Kuai, which means ice.
Ice.
Because they always serve you like hot soda. If you're like, oh, I have a Coke. And then it just comes hot.
Oh my God.
And so people, or like beer, a lot of times hot. And so you just have to ask for ice.
Not warm, like hot.
Like warm, like it's never been like it's never the middle of summer, and they don't put it in.
I don't use the ice in China. I'm careful.
Well, binga means like cold, right?
You know, I don't. There are certain countries you don't drink the water.
Oh, I drank the water for 12 years. Yeah, I had two parasites, but I drank the water.
There you go.
Yeah.
I had it once in Moscow. I had no idea that, and I was very careful because I read. I always look at the State Department. If they say don't drink the water, I listen to
them. Is
there
things to worry about in Russia?
Although I don't know if I should listen to Trump's State Department. But
yeah, well,
anyway,
the State Department is full of crooks. Yeah.
My brother works in the State Department. I don't listen to him.
Yeah, he's a Trumper.
He is not.
He's rising up the ranks of that administration.
I always look at the water, and I had parasites once from Moscow.
No fun.
It was no fun.
We should mention you have a book that's a great topic of mine. About Jewish tennis players, right?
The greatest Jewish tennis players of all time. Not my name. I wanted to call it Game, Set, and Matzah.
That's a great title.
This should, first of all, it's a great book. You should make it into an, I feel like someone should make this into an app. Because every single time I see Isner every year, I forget and I Google see if he's Jewish.
He's not.
He's not, no. Every time he's doing well, I'm like, I saw like Kevin Anderson's like, what you mentioned him earlier. I saw his like wife in the stands and it looked like she had a humsa necklace or something. So I was like trying to figure out if he was Jewish. He's not.
No.
Maybe she's like half.
Wait, so who's the greatest Jewish tennis player of all time?
Jason Hammer. No.
No, Dick Savitt.
Dick Savitt.
Big name.
He won. Yeah, he's actually... He's incredible. He's in his 80s. He lives here in Manhattan. And to my best of my knowledge, he still goes to his office at the some financial firm like every day. Although last time he told me, I only go to 3:00 now.
But he had to work after tennis because he was...
Well, he left tennis before he really had to. He won Wimbledon and he won the Australian and he won Wimbledon and then he was injured at the U.S. Open and he came back for a little bit, but he had to, basically go to work or he was going to teach tennis. Okay. So he just left afterwards. He would have won more titles.
Yeah, we didn't really, we glossed over this in the beginning when you're talking about Arthur Ashe, but like you would play all these majors. They were for amateurs only.
Yeah.
And then it was like a pro tennis circuit you'd play. And then they finally were.
So you couldn't really have a
exhibitions.
Career?
You had a career as like, playing exhibitions, right, to make money if
right.
you want to.
You could play exhibitions, but you're not supposed to play the exhibitions if you were going to play those.
You couldn't play in the majors then if you were going to.
Right. You were missing. Once you became a pro and took money and played these exhibitions, you couldn't play the Wimbledons and the U.S. Nationals and stuff. So he eventually was like, well, I got to go out there and make a living. So he went into finance. But, before he would have. In today's world, probably played longer. I mean, you're talking about 80 something.
You know what he needs? He needs some money. He should be the one who's spouting off battle. He could beat women playing today.
I thought you were 80
something years old.
No, it was tennis.
You know what
80
they used
year old
to do?
Actually, a funny story. The guy who's the publisher of the book, he just posted a thing that it was like 73, that it was the anniversary of the day that the court said that. Renee Richards could play as a woman on the tour.
Okay,
and
she was way ahead of her time.
Some person saw it and started, well, we'll see how this goes. I mean, it's not fair to the women and, what's he, afraid to play the men and everything. I think this is going to be a disaster. He didn't look at it to see this happened years ago. Renee's 80-something years old. She is not
playing. Put that on Twitter now. Yeah. You put old news that happened on Twitter. And
what a way to find out that your current views are not current.
Yeah,
right.
to find
it's
out
like,
that.
And I said to this, I don't get what you're talking about. This happened in 1977 or something. I think it was 1977.
Sandy, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, so your article, where can people find it about Arthur Ashe?
USA Today.
USA Today.
Well, next 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
Online? They have an online site?
And enjoy the the Open.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And what's your Twitter or
At Tennis Grapevine, one word.
Tennis Grapevine.
Fantastic.
I can remember that.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Jeff, let's get to the news.
Bring on the music.
Back. thank you to Sandy Harwood for doing the podcast. She had to run.
Had to run to an event, a U.S. Open event.
Big time U.S. Open events going on all over New York City. She's a big wig.
Yeah, didn't invite us to come along. I think she thought I'd embarrass her in my Federer outfit.
First news story of the week to us comes to us from the Daily Mail.
All right, my favorites.
Animal rights campaigners are ratcheting up attempts to save rats from city authorities who are trying to curb the rat population in Paris.
Oh, my God.
Rats have rights. It's a vermin's should be allowed to roam in Paris as protesters. So they're protesting the extermination of rats in Paris.
You know, with all that's going on with Trump and other, there's a lot of horrible things going on in the world.
ISIS.
There's a lot of worthy causes to resist in favor of rats. Seems pretty low on the list.
Here's what I have to say. I've been saying this for a while. After when you do comedy in New York City for a while, there's a lot of people who are good, and there are a lot of people who are just downright dog shit.
Yeah.
Just terrible comedians. And this is an epiphany I had recently. Not everyone has to be a comedian.
Right.
So there's a lot of people who just don't got it.
Right. Not everyone has to have a podcast either.
Exactly. In that same vein, not every animal needs to be saved.
Yeah, you're right.
Some animals just
natural selection.
Just kill them all.
And there's plenty of rats.
There's too many rats.
There's too many comedians out there. Too many podcasts out there.
There's
too many rats.
And one in the same, if you ask me. Yeah. And do you know that in Paris, this says there are around 4 million rats. It is a 1-to-8 rat to human ratio.
Wow.
So 8 rats per every human.
So if you're looking to hook up with a rat, really good odds. It's a great ratio.
8 rats per human.
You know what the problem is? This is why the movie industry, censorship,
rats should be protesting to save the humans.
Yeah, but did you ever see the movie Ratatouille? You probably haven't since you don't have kids.
No.
It's a movie about an adorable French rat who cooks in the kitchen. He's secretly a tremendous chef. It's a very popular movie, but I think the people, it's gone to their head a little bit. It's humanized them. Dehumanize rats. We need to make another Ratatouille 2 where he becomes like a...
Like when Jimmy Fallon smudged around Donald Trump's hair. He humanized him.
Yes, and that's what Ratatouille did.
They humanized.
I mean, it was pretty adorable. You kind of like rats.
The
Jimmy Fallon effect.
Well, I don't like it.
All right.
So she has a Facebook page, Save the Rats.
Do they have a lot of rats in China? Like, is it like a big problem like it is in New York and
Paris? No, it's not. It's a much bigger problem in New York City. I mean, I'm sure they have them, but I didn't know. They weren't part of my daily life like they are in New York.
What about cockroaches?
Yeah, I guess.
But not like New York City.
Not like New York City.
Yeah, we see rats. How New Yorker, it's a good test of how New Yorker you are. Do you flinch when you see a rat now or you don't even care?
I don't care.
Your wife?
No, she doesn't care anymore. We had this conversation a couple days ago. She used to freak out. Now she's like, whatever. Especially mice. I think we killed 8 mice in our apartment at one time.
Whoa. You guys are freaking serial killers, according to these people.
Yeah,
they're going to be outside your apartment protesting.
Bring it on, you Frenchie. Last news story of the week from the Shanghaiist, our old friends at the Shanghaiist.
Yeah.
Earlier this month, a bus driver was cruising down a mountain road in rural Yunnan province in China when a large rock fell from above, smashed through his windshield, and nailed him right in the shoulder before ricocheting back and knocking him on the head. Despite 2 blows to the head, this bus driver managed to keep control of the bus, which is carrying 14 passengers. He's in some serious pain, but he also managed to stay at the wheel for the next 10 minutes until he made it to a service station. How about that?
That's kind of blows my mind. I remember like having a notebook in like high school where I'd write down my very first things I thought were like writing bits or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at it once years later and being like, this is all stupid. But then I had like something where I was like, what's the point of those signs that say falling rock? Like, is there ever going to be a falling rock? Like,
that's
what?
A great
bit. Like, why did they have these signs? Sign was for this guy. They need that sign in China. I remember this. Like, one of the only things I could read in my notebook. The falling rock line, they have to take the time to build the sign and do all this thing. And is it going to save one goddamn person?
Well, and then
couldn't
by
save
the time,
this guy.
By the time. No, but it didn't save him.
But they didn't have a sign.
Well, even if they did, what is he supposed to do when the rock comes through his seat, through his roof?
Yeah, smashes into the car while you're reading the sign.
He's supposed to swerve because you see a sign?
Yeah, you have to really get reflexes.
Even if there is a sign, it doesn't mean.
Future self-driving cars are going to see the sign in like reverse.
That's genius.
Sensors.
I think for all this, any hack comedian in the world talks about how Chinese people can't drive. Well, I say hogwash. This guy got hit in the head with a rock twice, and he still
kept control of the bus.
Kept control.
Was he? It's like speed, but like He's like the speed bus driver from the movie.
If you think, think about it, he's probably the best driver of the world. Because if you're a Chinese bus driver, the amount of things in your career you have to swerve, just chickens running through the street, guys coming out on bicycles, some guy running down the street, no
ice cream
on.
Trucks. They don't know what those are.
Rocks. Yeah, he's been swerving stuff his whole career.
He's the Sully of Chinese bus drivers.
Sullenberger. He could have landed that bus in the Hudson.
We got to make it a sequel. New movie.
Yeah.
Get on it, team. Production.
Shout out to him. Kaplan, that's our podcast.
Yeah, good pod.
Great pod. Sandy, thanks for doing the pod. Go check her out. Read her in the USA Today.
Yeah.
Read her in everything.
Watch the US Open. Tennis needs your support.
And I will see you at the Punchline Comedy Club tonight in Sacramento, California. Buy that Southwest Airlines ticket.
All right. Let's get lost.
Get lost.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.